that how you guys met?
It was my doing.
Okay.
Yeah. I put an ad in the paper. I had drums, and I'd been playing them for a couple of months, and I wanted to get a band together. So I did two things. I put an ad in the paper, which cost, you know, next to nothing, and I phoned up the radio station, and because I'd heard that, you know, every now and again, there was a hot DJ in Calgary. He'd just come to town. His name was Don Lamb, and he could talk really fast, and he was the first fast-talking guy that they had in Calgary. So I phoned up, and he would give little ads, but it went something like this. He was just at the end of his show. He was getting to going off. He says, and if you're a guitar player and you want to be a band, call Kim, blah, 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 blah. Then he gave my number, and that was it, you know, and nobody called, strangely enough. And so, but I did put the ad in the paper, and I got a whole bunch of answers. And one came from Brendan, who was the bass player in the early Stampeders, and a few other guys. And so that's how it all started. So I met Rich through Brendan, and Ronnie, you know, I don't can't remember how he got to be with us. But
I was there. Mel Shaw managed the same band that broke up that the Rebounds, who we were called the Paintbrushes, the Rebounds. The Paintbrushes took a break from our house gig at Alexandria Hall in Calgary, where we played almost every Friday and Saturday. We were so popular because we were on the Guys and Dolls TV show. So we would take nights away from there. The Rebounds called themselves the Turpentines because we were called the Paintbrushes. So the Turpentines were going to wipe out the Paintbrushes.
But going back before that.
Yes?
I had met Brendan Little,
right,
at the CYO meeting, Catholic Youth Organization meeting at our church. Yeah, I saw him in the back of the kitchen area there with a bass guitar, playing records on his little Sears Symphony 45 player, and I introduced myself to him and I said, "Gee, it's got some pretty neat records there." And he said, "Well, I got a whole house full of records. Do you want to come over and hear them?" Because I said, "Yeah, I'm a guitar player. Why don't we get together and maybe have a listen and maybe a jam?" And that's when I met Brendan at a church. And I went over to his house, and it was wall-to-wall records. And his mother made incredible cinnamon buns. And I knew right away when I smelt those cinnamon buns upstairs, we have to have more get-togethers and more rehearsals. So it was Brendan, actually, that answered the ad in the paper that Kim had put in. Looking for band members.
Well, so you met through Brendan then.
Yeah, and I ended up actually joining those two.
Yeah.
And I brought this weird guy from Creston called Lynn Romer with me, who had answered the ad. Yeah. And that was the first, kind of the first version of the Rebounds. And then we got, you know, we played around a bit. Mel managed us because these guys that Ronnie, the band that Ronnie was in, they all broke up and went their separate ways.
There was also a sprinkling. One sec, Kim.
What?
There was a sprinkling of Rich and I meeting on the occasional time at the Hudson Bay Music Department. And he'd be there kind of plinking on guitar, and I'd walk in, and he wanted to check out guitars and say, "Hey, aren't you in school?" And "No, quit school. What are you doing here?" "Supposed to be looking for a job." "Yeah, that's what I told my mom." "Let's rock." And we'd jam there in the Hudson Bay department store, musical department, or at one of the ones in Calgary. So we had early meetings like that before all of that. So
right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, we eventually kind of got it together. Mel took over managing, and we wanted to get this band to go to England with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it required guys that would actually consider doing that. And so
I
was game.
How did you meet Mel?
we were hanging around the television show or something, and my older brother, who... well, you know, he thought he could fix things, and he was a singer, and he wasn't, he was actually in the band, yeah, he was singing with the Rebounds then, sort of thing, occasionally.
Race,
yeah. And so he met Mel, and out in the parking lot, Mel's car wouldn't work, and so Race kind of got it going, and then he said to Mel, "Well, I can fix this or that," so he went over to fix Mel's car, and in the meantime, he told him about us, and it was a wiring thing, and so when Race was finished fixing Mel's car, when he turned the key, the windshield wipers went on, and when he turned on the radio, the car started, and things like that. It was, but that's kind of how that started.
Right. So, what about there was some story about Kim, you having to learn the Ventures or something? Or
the Ventures? Well, I mean, they were, everybody was
Wipeout or something?
Yeah, all that stuff. But the Wipeout was my first thing. I was playing that on my desk at school, right?
Uh-huh.
And then everybody said, you know, well, you're a drummer, you can play Wipeout. And, you know, and that was kind of my first lick that I played. And then... And then I learned some time and stuff like that. But when I went to this rehearsal, I came over and to meet Richard and Brendan. And they had this drummer. And his name was Alfonso. And so, you know, and he'd been playing with his dad in a wedding band and stuff like that. So anyway, I sat down at the drums, and the first thing we played was Wipeout. And Alfonso handed me the sticks and said, I'm going home.
Us bands in Calgary in those days started out essentially as instrumental.
Right.
We're all influenced by the instrumental bands that were having hits of the day, and that one of them was the Ventures. There was the Fireballs, Cliff Richards and the Shadows. Even mm-hmm. though Cliff Richards was a singer, the Shadows had lots of instrumentals out that we'd copy and before we even realized we were able to sing and someone else. And, I guess we were kind of influenced, at least by Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Little Richard and all those, but we never really...
Well, there was the expense of a microphone, you know. You can't just become a vocal band just like that.
That's right. When we did have Mike, we'd all plug the guitars, microphones, bass, everything into one amplifier.
Explosions.
So it was instrumentals, and then eventually started to sing, and then the Beatles craze and all that.
And this is 1964.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So Mel Shaw wrote most of your songs in the early days, right?
Well, yeah, which wasn't very many.
Right.
I mean, but he did. And that was, we weren't writing. Nobody thought about it, you know?
When did that click?
Well, you know, it was really the Beatles. I mean, Lennon McCartney, when it started to become known that these guys actually wrote their own songs. Well, you know, so that's where you get songs. You write them. Oh, this is great. You know, and then I remember reading an article that listed the incomes of the Beatles, the various Beatles, and I saw that Lennon and McCartney were making a lot more money than Ringo.
Was your first song Morning Magic? What was your first song contributed to the Stampeders? that you wrote?
I'm not too sure. Was it Don't Look at Her or something? Or was it...
No, that wasn't your song. That was Mel's song.
Don't Look at Her?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
She's walking by your way.
Oh, was it Be a Woman?
No, that Morning... Might have been. No, Be a Woman. Be a Woman. That would have... Because we went down to New York to... But no, that Morning Magic was first.
Morning
that
Magic.
Before that, yeah.
You forgot which one she wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just dabbling with some songwriting, and I had that entity, and I guess we had booked some studio time.
Wait a minute.
At RCA in
Morning
Montreal.
Magic.
That's right. Just an entity that I had come up with,
mm-hmm.
and we had booked a recording session in Montreal, so we were going to put all these songs down. I guess we had our first little record deal with Melbourne or something. Melbourne Records in Toronto?
No.
What was that?
No, everything we put out was on Mel's labels.
SoCan.
Was there Melbourne?
SoCan was the Mel label. And no,
that's the very beginning. Yeah. I thought Melbourne was this guy, this investor in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, well... I don't remember that. You sure you're not hallucinating? There?
No.
It was Crosswalk, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And the guy was a big fat guy.
And the label made up, it looked like it had spots and dots. It was a polka
dot
label, yeah.
And the reason we didn't make it was the guy that ran the record company wasn't Jewish.
Crosswalk was kind of your... That was after the Six Stampeders broke.
Yeah.
Broke off.
Yeah.
And Crosswalk was when you guys became three.
That was the first single of the three of us, yeah.
Right. So why did you guys split up?
Well, Race went nuts. and Brendan just got tired and wanted to go. They were all older, like between six and seven years older than us. So we're still in our late teens, 19 mm-hmm. and 20. And these guys are in their mid to late 20s. They were tired of living on absolutely no money, sleeping in the worst hotels in the world.
And as well, they were influenced by different styles. They did very well on Roy Orbison.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Or the Righteous Brothers.
Right. So I guess at this time,
Tom Jones, that sort of thing. And somehow, without even saying the words, we could kind of sense that us three younger guys wanted to go be arena rockers,
right.
and that kind of stuff and material would only get us to Las Vegas.
Right.
In a cabaret setting.
Yeah.
So that's probably what also clashed, besides them getting tired of the
grind. Yeah, and they were just, they were older. They, you know, they would reach that stage of their life where they couldn't see this going anywhere, and they wanted to have a life. That's so they left, and, you know, one at a time sort of thing. They gradually broke down. Van was the last guy to go.
And they all amounted to nothing.
People that you've met, the most memorable.
You mean famous, famous people?
Oh yeah,
or just
two of the girls I've loved before.
You never met him.
I met a dead person once.
I don't know. I didn't really befriend any real famous people. I mean, Wolfman was fun. He was so much like Ronnie, though. It was just basically like knowing the same guy.
Yeah, that's right. And he talked like me too.
I heard you guys met Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean. Only in, you know, because he used to live in Mississauga. He'd run into at the airport and on a couple of TV shows and stuff.
Yeah. Are we into brushes with fame and people we've met?
Yeah, that's brushes
what
with
okay.
fame.
Well, I was 11, 12 years old, and the Three Stooges were playing at the Calgary Stampede, and there we were in the Hudson Bay Store. Boy, we went out there a lot. And there was Larry walking around. Larry, how could that be? He was only on TV.
The Three Stooges.
Yes, and then we saw Mo downstairs, and we said, Mo, wow, Mo. And he said, yeah, hi, kids. He said, we saw Larry upstairs. You want us to take you to him? No, no, I'll just sniff him out. And he was going along like that. Then he gave us all a trading card, all pre-signed, and we looked down on it. And as we looked up, where'd he go? Brush with fame.
Yeah, well, he's as interesting as anyone I've ever met.
Three Stooges, oh, yeah.
Orbison, we tried to give him our food bill.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
My brother Van was always a jokester, and us early six-man Stampeders, where he was within, we went to see Roy Orbison at the Corral in Calgary, and we kind of followed them like stalking across the hotel, across the McLeod Trail there, and... the only ones in the restaurant was Roy Orbison, his band, and us, sitting about five tables over. So Van goes over, and he says, pardon me, Mr. Orbison, can I please have your autograph? Oh, certainly. And he says, no, down here at the bottom of the check.
Did he actually sign it?
You rascal. No, you rascal. The whole band laughed.